I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Election Day is almost here. In just a few days, we'll know the results of the statewide and legislative campaigns. What issues have emerged as the key factors in many of these races? Well, today on the program, we have a group of some of Vermont's best political reporters to look at the people and issues of Campaign 2018. With us today are three people who have covered these races very closely. April McCollum of the Burlington Free Press, Alicia Freese of 7 Days, and Neil Goswami of WCAX-TV. Great to have you all back on the program.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Let's start off with the race for governor. Incumbent Republican Phil Scott is seeking a second term in office. Christine Hallquist is his Democratic challenger. I'd love to hear from all three of you just at the start of the program about what you think have been the main issues in this race and just your general impressions about the campaigns that these two candidates have run. Alicia, what are your thoughts about this campaign?
Well, I think it started off pretty slow, and in these final weeks, we've seen a little more conflict between the two candidates. Christine Hallquist, I think, has worked pretty hard in the last couple of weeks to try to get her message out there, and there have been a few somewhat contentious debates. But that said, I think it's still fair to describe it as a campaign that hasn't mustered a whole lot of enthusiasm. Hallquist has tried to portray Scott as somebody who doesn't really have big ideas and has also been sort of a top-down leader, and has said she would offer something different, talks about paid family leave and minimum wage, and most often her plan to provide universal broadband. I think as the VPR Vermont PBS poll showed, I don't think she's closed the gap that, you know, she's not won over rural voters, it seems, from that poll. Even in Chittenden County, she seems to be struggling. So I think it's an uphill battle for her.
And we should mention that it's been almost 60 years since an incumbent governor has lost a bid for reelection back in 1962. So an uphill battle, definitely. April, any surprises for you in this campaign?
I don't know. I'm not sure what I expected. I think I've been interested in how much the fiber issue and rural economic development has been playing a role. I don't know that it was a surprise, but it's been interesting to see the contrast in how each candidate would deal with the economic problems posed by Vermont's aging demographics and stagnant population. Phil Scott's approach is generally to just hold the line on taxes and fees, although he would do some other programs to try to incentivize development. Christine Hallquist, as Alicia mentioned, kind of seems to view this fiber broadband plan as the cure-all for most of Vermont's economic problems, or at least it would be at the start of solving some of those.
Neil, what do you think about this campaign?
Well, you know, Christine Hallquist is the underdog heading into Election Day on Tuesday. And when you're the underdog, you have to become a little bit more aggressive toward the end and try to provide a lot of contrast with your opponent. And so I think she's been working hard at doing that. She's finding it hard to find some traction. And her campaign has largely been sort of aspirational. She's put out a lot of big, bold ideas. Many of them have few sort of policy details about how they would be implemented or how they would be paid for. She's made a lot of big promises about how she can do all of these things without really raising taxes on people. And I think after 2014 with Governor Peter Shumlin and the single-payer promise that sort of dissolved in front of voters' eyes, people are really hoping and needing to see more concrete details of how big ideas would be implemented. And I don't think she's been able to deliver that as strongly as a lot of people would like. And that makes it difficult to win over supporters when you have that lack of detail going on.
And I think even with the lack of detail that she's offered around funding, we've seen the Republican Governors Association just recently put money into mailers, basically portraying her as this tax and spender.
Right.
And on the other side, we haven't really seen hardly any outside support, outside funding for Hallquist, which, you know, there have been no TV ads. So I think that's that's an important piece of getting your name out there when you are a first-time candidate, and that's something that hasn't happened.
And it's also a key sign that perhaps the DGA doesn't see this race as winnable for Christine Hallquist. 2 years ago, when it was an open seat and Sue Minter was the Democratic candidate, they got in the game and they played hard to win. And this year, they're pretty much non-existent. And so that may not bode well for what their internal numbers are telling them about where she stands in this race.
Today in the program, we're looking at the people and issues of Campaign 2018. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Well, during this gubernatorial race, Phil Scott has vowed not to raise taxes in the next 2 years. Christine Hallquist is backing some programs that will definitely need a revenue source, but she won't identify which tax should be raised. She says that decision should be made through a collaborative process with all stakeholders. These two issues can be seen with the issue of water quality. It's estimated the state will need to spend at least $25 million a year in each of the next 2 years to properly address this issue. Phil Scott wants to find a way to do it without a tax increase.
We're spending more money in the last 2 years and a 70% increase over previous years. So I'm committed to water quality and water quality funding. I'm just not interested in providing another tax.
Neil, there seems to be a definite pattern here. Scott is holding on to his priorities from the campaign of 2 years ago. So is his message of 2018 pretty much the same as 2016?
Well, it is. I mean, he's campaigning on making Vermont more affordable, as he says, which is pretty much what he campaigned on in 2016. And, you know, he can point to his record of not raising taxes and fees. And there's a whole set of Vermonters out there that really appreciate and applaud that effort to holding the line on taxes and fees. You know, we should point out that when we are talking about these water quality funding plans, neither Scott nor Hallquist are willing to identify a source of funding. So neither should get a free pass on that one.
In fact, let's hear from Hallquist about that. She says there are a lot of good ways to pay for the water cleanup initiative, but this isn't the time, she says, to identify one.
I'm not going to sit here and define where that's going to come from, because that's the type of leadership that doesn't work. That's called command and control. We all have to get together and agree where that money's going to come from. And there are lots of good ideas where it can come from, but ultimately it's going to be a collaborative decision.
April, this is not the only time that Hallquist has failed to propose a revenue source for one of her priorities. There's also her support for paid family leave, single-payer health care, free college tuition. Do you think voters expect candidates to say how they're going to pay for it?
Well, she has identified some funding sources. Some of them have kind of shifted, it seems, over the course, or it depends on when the question was asked. But for example, the water quality, she has talked about in an interview with the Free Press about using marijuana tax and regulate money to help pay for that. But then in another time, she also talked about different uses for that marijuana money. And she said she would also consider a per parcel fee or an occupancy fee, which are some things that have been discussed in Montpelier for those efforts. So there have been some programs where she's discussed possibilities, and the tuition-free college. She talks about reducing the prison population to pay for that in the long run. And in the short run, it would be, it's not really clear, you know, any one of a few different tax ideas. So I think that there is some skepticism when it's not a clear plan. Even the fiber plan, she says it's not going to cost Vermonters more, but I think there's been some skepticism about that. It's a big promise. It's something that other governors have not been able to do. And, I don't know, I'm not sure. I mean, she can set the vision, but she will need, if she is elected, to be able to make it a lot more concrete very quickly.
Let's go to our callers and start off with Donna, who's calling from South Burlington. Hi, Donna. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you very much. Well, my comment is just about how I'm mostly undecided about the Bernie campaign, and as well as maybe Hallquist and people who have great ideas, but just as you were talking about, they haven't really provided ways of paying for them, or the ideas that Bernie comes up with, it's just like tax the rich. I just don't see that really flying, and Medicare for All is kind of a case in point.
So you're undecided in those races?
I'm just undecided about Bernie. I'm not undecided about Hallquist.
All right. Donna, we appreciate your phone call very much. If you'd like to join the conversation here at Vermont Edition, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. And I also want listeners to know that you can find a guide to where all the candidates for statewide office stand on the issues at vpr.net. Our guide to Vermont statewide candidates provides information and links culled from VPR's candidate interviews and debates. Great way to look at how the candidates stand on the issues. You can find that at vpr.net. So, Alicia, as Neil mentioned earlier, the amount of money in this campaign is very, very different than it was 2 years ago. I think the RGA and the DGA 2 years ago spent millions of dollars. I'm not sure if the RGA is spending so much this time around. Is that a recognition that this is a tough race for Hallquist?
I think in part, yes. I mean, I think it's not unexpected that you would see a lot of money in a year where there is an open seat, which there was in 2016. But yeah, I think you can I think you can draw that conclusion based both on the fact that the DGA has been absent, offer no support to Hallquist's campaign, and that the RGA, while it has spent some money, it's significantly less than in 2016. And some of that was back when Scott was facing a primary challenger.
In April, Christine Hallquist is the first transgender to run for governor anywhere in the country. How has that influenced this campaign or not?
Well, it's gotten her a lot of national media attention. You know, even in this past week, we saw a GQ article. We saw Samantha Bee, the late night comic, did a segment on her. You know, pretty much every national media organization has done some type of story about Christine Hallquist, and usually focusing on her identity as a transgender individual. But she often says in those profiles and often on the campaign trail that Vermonters don't care about her identity, or at least very much they care about it a lot less than they care about the issues. But it's an interesting game to play, because it's what's giving her this boost of support from around the nation. People are excited about what that candidacy represents, and it's gotten her a lot of publicity. But then she kind of tries to downplay it when she's asked about it directly.
Let's go back to our listeners and talk to Robert in Bethel. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Good, thanks.
It's an exciting time of year. Hey, Bob, we have a situation down here in the Rutland-Windsor district for the state representative office or seat, and the competitor is Robert McFadden, who was a write-in. And so I just got off the phone with the Secretary of State. So I'm very curious how many write-in people got on the ballot in the state of Vermont. They really couldn't give me an answer, but we came up with a number under 10, which I think is really an interesting point in this race. And I was just curious if any of your people know how many write-ins were in the state of Vermont. Then also, I wanted to comment on early voting. I think the state of Vermont has a 45-day window, which is the longest in the country.
That's correct.
I think early voting, yeah, and I think early voting, really, the incumbents lean on that, because even Rob's message really hasn't gotten out in the last week, but the incumbents have been pushing and pushing and pushing for early voting. So I think the window for early voting should in Vermont should be a 30-day window or a 2-week window. So I think a lot of people have been, the vote has actually been taken from them because they really don't know the candidates. And they're done.
Robert, we appreciate your phone call. Neil, do you have any idea how many write-in candidates there are?
I really don't. It's a good question, but I'm kind of at a loss here. I don't know.
I think in the Rutland State Senate race, there are three write-in candidates, but I could be wrong about that. That's my memory. Tough road for write-in candidates. April, the idea of early voting really taking off. I think the Secretary of State thinks that maybe a third of all votes in November that are cast are going to be done by early ballot. That's really a significant number.
Yeah, I haven't studied those numbers, but we have a record number of voter registration. It seems like there's a lot of participation happening this year. And then, of course, Vermonters can also, this time around, register to vote on the day of the election for this general election. So it's possible that we'll see just overall different types of engagement and potentially more engagement than we've seen in midterm elections in the past.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at the people and issues of campaign 2018 with a group of three reporters who have been following these campaigns very closely. Alicia Freese of 7 Days, Neil Goswami of WCAX-TV, and April McCollum of the Burlington Free Press. So let's take a look at the race for lieutenant governor in this contest. Incumbent Democrat and progressive David Zuckerman is seeking his second term in office. His Republican challenger is House Minority Leader Don Turner. Alicia, how do you see this race shaping up?
Well, I think Zuckerman has a comfortable advantage. I think Don Turner has run a surprisingly robust campaign. He has been really getting out there. He's been raising a significant amount of money. So he's mounting a very credible challenge. But I think he really is starting from a lesser position. He's got an uphill battle, and even his Republican supporters will tell you that.
Well, the two candidates disagree on ways to reduce property tax burdens. Zuckerman backs a plan to have all homeowners pay their school taxes based on their income, and he says everyone should pay the same percentage of their income to support schools.
Wealthy Vermonters are paying a lower percentage of their income towards schools, and I would move towards shifting that so that everybody pays an equal fair share on a percentage basis. And as you go up into the 200,000, 600,000, and 800,000 income families, the percentage they pay for schools drops way below the approximate 3% that most Vermonters pay.
But Turner says this plan will raise taxes on some Vermonters, and he wants to focus on ways to cut educational expenses.
There are numbers of ways that we need to work with the education system to bring down the cost. But I totally disagree with the Lieutenant Governor on shifting. The funding formula that we have, I think, is broken. It's outlived its life. It is unfair. It's unsustainable.
So, April, here's a contest where the two candidates really disagree on a lot of key issues.
Yeah, I mean, that being one of them. And there are others, too. They actually did work together on a marijuana regulation bill this year. But in a lot of other areas, there's sharp disagreement among those two. And I think Don Turner he's been doing a lot of campaigning with Phil Scott. He's trying to align himself with the popularity that Phil Scott has. They're going to be campaigning, the last few days before the election. And I think hoping that message of affordability or tax relief will trickle down to that next level office. And it's interesting to look back at 2016. David Zuckerman only won that race by like a 6-point margin over Randy Brock. So obviously now he's an incumbent, but there is some potential that the message that Phil Scott has successfully run on could also be a winner for Don Turner.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Elizabeth in Charlotte. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling in as a, I would define myself as a liberal Democrat, and I'm calling in to voice my support for Governor Scott. I I think he generally trends politically sort of down the middle. I was really impressed with his reversal on guns. And I appreciate that he helps to elevate the voices of rural Vermonters, and he sort of, really dug in on the tax issue. And so I think if you have both sides upset with you most of the time, then you're probably doing a pretty good job. So I think he's the right governor for Vermont.
Elizabeth, many thanks for your question and your comment today. Neil, what about this idea of does Phil Scott have coattails for Don Turner?
Well, I think Don Turner certainly hopes so, and he'll need them. We've heard the governor, many viewers have probably heard the governor on radio spots speaking out on behalf of Don Turner, and they have similar economic messages. Certainly, Don Turner has expressed his fiscal conservatism over the last number of years as the House Minority Leader, voting against many of the proposals put forward by Democrats. And so on the fiscal side, I think they're very close. Don Turner might be a little more conservative than Phil Scott on some of the social issues, but I think his best path to a potential victory here is linking his name with Phil Scott and getting voters to appreciate that they've worked together on a number of fiscal fronts over the last half decade or so.
Let's talk to Steve, who's calling from Middletown Springs. Hi, Steve. What's on your mind today?
Hi there.
Hi.
How are you?
Great.
Thanks for the show. So my comment and question was, I live in a rural area. I'm in Rutland County, and we see communities kind of starting to peter out a little bit. There are demographic losses. My wife works in the school system. I work in a parent-child center. People are struggling. The idea of cutting costs really doesn't resonate. You know, people are already doing a lot with a little. At the same time, I feel like the message that broadband, that somehow computers and internet access are going to save us, doesn't really tap into any of the existing strengths in the communities to revitalize them. And so I feel like the discussion at the gubernatorial level is very weak as a leadership discussion on what's happening like in the non-Burlington part of Vermont and the direction it's headed in. And I'm just wondering if the guest speakers see the same thing, or am I missing something? I feel like the discussion isn't doing the issue justice, and I think it's much more important than it's the attention it's being given and the creative thought it's being given.
All right, Steve, thanks very much for your question. Alicia?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting observation. I have heard other people express skepticism that, Hallquist's main proposal for revitalizing rural areas is broadband. And I've heard people, and Phil Scott has actually made this point that, there are parts of the state with perfectly good internet service, and they're still struggling. And Scott, they're both making calling for really ambitious change. I mean, to alter the course of our demographic trends is a huge, huge task. And I think Scott also has not offered a really ambitious, comprehensive plan to achieve that. So I'm not surprised that there are voters left a little unsatisfied.
In April, the demographic challenge that Alicia was talking about is really significant. We saw it mentioned in the downgrading of the state's bond rating and also with pension funds. But this state is getting older. I think in the next 12 years, the number of people 65 and older is going to increase by about 50%. And that's while the whole population of the state increases about 1%. So this is, I mean, they have identified this as a problem, but have they come up with a comprehensive solution?
Well, Phil Scott's proposals so far, I mean, he's attacked this on a number of fronts, but some of the things that he's tried to do are incentives for trying to recruit people to Vermont, in some way having like a mass marketing effort to try to draw people in, which didn't go through, although we saw the $10,000 remote worker incentive go through, which was not the governor's original idea. But so that's been one way. He's trying to encourage refugee resettlement here and other, you know, immigrants and other people who can come in and move to Vermont. But there hasn't necessarily been a whole comprehensive plan. It's a difficult. Oh, another thing that comes to mind is the Vermont National Guard tuition benefit to try to keep people who are in the Guard here and wanting to participate in Vermont. So there have been a number of things that he's tried, but it's going to take a lot of different programs to address that demographic trend.
Let's talk to Anna in Weybridge. Hi, Anna. Welcome to the program.
Hello. I'm calling in response to the woman who is a Democrat and will vote against Christine Hallquist. I wanted to say that I support and trust Christine Hallquist specifically because she is not claiming to know how to fund the measures that she supports and that Vermont needs. It shows she respects the Vermont legislature to do its job, and it shows her willingness to work together with the legislature. She's not trying to be the big boss and get what she wants. This is opposed to Governor Scott, who I was very upset to see going against the Vermont towns in school funding last spring. You could describe that more if I'm not being clear enough, but we need a governor who works with the legislature and is for the citizens, listen to the citizens.
Okay, Anna, we appreciate your phone call very much. If you have some thoughts about the races this year, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. I want to make a clarification of something that I was talking about earlier in the program. We got a call about write-in votes, and I mentioned that I thought that the three Rutland County Democrats were write-ins. I had part of it right, but I definitely had part of it wrong. The part I had right was they did run as write-in candidates in the August primary, and they received enough votes to secure the nomination, so now they will be printed on the ballot as candidates in November. I want to make sure everybody understands that, that the Democrats do have three candidates on the ballot for the Rutland County Senate District. Let's take a look at the race for U.S. Senate. In this race, we have two-term incumbent Bernie Sanders seeking another term in office. He's raised over $8 million in this race. And that's money that could be transferred over to a presidential campaign should he decide to run for president again in 2020. Now, this is the reason that Sanders says he's running for re-election to the U.S. Senate.
Sadly, at the top of the list is the need to defeat the agenda of the most reactionary president in the modern history of the United States of America. What I'm doing is trying to defeat the divisiveness, the racism, the sexism, the homophobia, the religious bigotry.
Sanders' Republican opponent is Manchester businessman Lawrence Zupan. He's made it very clear that he believes Sanders' support for what Zupan calls, quote, democratic socialist policies is a disaster for this country.
When socialism enters the civic life of a nation, what it does is it centralizes power and direction and control of resources and the fruits of resources into the government's hands, which in their all-knowing wisdom, they deign to decide who gets what. That is totally anathema and unworkable and is what is the exact opposite of what has made us the greatest country in the history of the world.
Neil, some sharp differences in this race.
Yeah, there really are. You know, throughout the campaign, Lawrence Zupan has sort of tried to tell voters that Bernie Sanders supports a Venezuela-style economy and government or a Soviet-era economy and government, neither of which are really true. Yes, the senator describes himself as a democratic socialist, but he says it's more akin to Scandinavian countries where they have, democracies, but also have a lot of socialized services. And that's sort of the model that Bernie Sanders is talking about. So, I mean, if you want contrast in your candidates, this race is that. Very stark contrast here.
And today we're looking at the people and issues of campaign 2018. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Perhaps you're an undecided voter. We'd love to hear from you. Or the kinds of issues that you think are the big priorities of 2018, 1-800-639-2211. Alicia, Bernie Sanders has spent a lot of time this fall campaigning for progressive candidates all across the country. My guess is that he's been out of state campaigning more than he has been in state campaigning. Do you think Vermont voters really care about that, or do they support his effort to elect progressive candidates throughout the country?
I think they've shown pretty clearly that not only does that not upset them, they actually are proud to have a senator who has developed such a high profile and has really become this celebrity who is fighting for candidates and causes that I think a lot of Vermonters probably support. I think there's a feeling that the elections here aren't necessarily that competitive, but the midterms elsewhere in the country have really high stakes. And I think Vermonters feel invested in those races as well, even though they're taking place outside of state borders. So I think they're pleased to see Sanders pitching in that regard.
In April, we saw in the 2016 presidential race, there were places that Bernie Sanders would go and he was treated like a rock star. It was really something to watch him as he went on college campuses and other places. He really seemed to generate a lot of support among a large number of people. So are we seeing that in the 2018 races outside of Vermont that he's still a pretty big draw?
I think so. You know, unlike in the presidential election in 2016, I haven't been out on the trail with him to see and to hear and to feel the momentum or the enthusiasm for him. But it seems like he's still making headlines everywhere he goes. You know, the fact that he shows up for a candidate is newsworthy. And, he still has a very high profile. And the fact that he continues to think about running for president and kind of publicly mull that over adds some extra drama to wherever he goes.
And Neil, it was interesting when Bernie Sanders was asked directly if he would pledge to serve out his entire 6-year Senate term if he's reelected. He said no. He might decide to run for president in 2020, which really means getting out on the campaign trail probably this spring and this summer. So what do you think the chances are that Bernie's going to run for president again?
Well, it's hard to say. Well, I should say, number one, I was kind of stumped by the reaction to the senator's statement. Of course, he's considering running for president and therefore hoping to win. And if he wins, he can't be a senator. So not pledging to serve out a 6-year term didn't really surprise me. But there are a couple things to keep in mind here. He would be 79 on Inauguration Day, which for a U.S. president would be the oldest ever. And it's a lot of work to campaign, and who knows if you can sort of catch lightning in a bottle twice. Perhaps the Democratic Party is looking for somebody younger to appeal to a new generation of voters. A lot of factors at play here. No doubt he's certainly considering it. I would be surprised if he were to move forward and run a second time.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at the campaign races of 2018. With three reporters who have been following these races very closely, Neil Goswami of WCAX-TV, April McCollum of the Burlington Free Press, and Alicia Freese of 7 Days. Let's take a look at the race for the U.S. House. In this contest, incumbent 6-term Congressman Peter Welch is seeking another term in office, and his role in Congress could change dramatically if the Democrats win back control of the U.S. House. His Republican opponent is West Charleston sales representative Anya Tino. She argues there's a need for new leadership in Washington.
It is time for new representation just because Peter Welch has demonstrated that he's out of touch with the everyday Vermonter. He voted against the Tax and Jobs Act, We have workers in many companies that have received benefits from the Tax and Jobs Act because it was passed without his vote.
Welch says he voted against that tax bill because he felt it was a terrible piece of legislation.
That tax bill is an abomination. I mean, this is a bill that is going to add $2.3 trillion to our deficit. The vast majority of the benefit, about 83% of the benefit, went to corporations in the wealthiest 1% in the country.
So, Neil, this race features an incumbent with huge name recognition and a challenger who is not a household word. How do you see this campaign shaping up?
Well, you know, it's obviously a very tough battle to unseat an incumbent here in Vermont. Peter Welch has pretty much statewide name recognition. He's pretty popular, more than likely heading back to Washington for another 2 years. But she should really be commended. She is a credible, confident candidate who has stepped up and probably has a bright future in the Republican Party here in Vermont. Perhaps maybe not at the congressional level immediately, but in a lower race somewhere else in the future.
And Alicia, this is probably a race that would be pretty difficult for almost any Republican to win this year, given Congressman Welch's popularity. And I think in the VPR Vermont PBS poll, close to 60% of folks think he's doing a good job.
Yeah, and I think the dominance of candidates like Welch are part of the reason why we see, you know, his opponent is very young, does not have experience running for office. I mean, I think a lot of Republicans look at the race and say, I don't want to go up against that guy. So you're left with kind of the spunky and green candidates that don't really care that it's a huge challenge.
And sometimes those candidates run one time statewide and people get to know them. They lose, but then they run again and they have a better chance that second time around.
Yeah, that's true.
So, April, looking at the Vermont legislature, it's kind of an interesting situation. The Democrats would like to pick up a few seats in the House, probably hold what they have in the Senate. I think it's 23-7 right now in the Senate, 23 Democrats, 7 Republicans. What's the outlook out there?
Well, the Republicans, by my count, and the Republicans are defending 13 open seats that they've you know, most recently had a Republican in those seats, and those Republicans are not running again. Democrats are defending 15 open seats, but 6 of them are guaranteed progressive or Democratic victories because unless there's a good write-in campaign by a Republican, because there's no Republican on the ballot in 6 of those races. So that's kind of where they're on defense. And as you mentioned, you know, the margin is only a handful of races. If Democrats and progressives and their allies who are independents can pull together a coalition and just chip away at a few of those Republican seats. Republicans currently have 53 seats in the House of Representatives. Then Democrats and progressives would gain a supermajority and be able to override a Phil Scott veto if Phil Scott is reelected as governor, of course, which would make his second term much more difficult than his first term has been.
Neil, what do you make of some of these legislative races? Are there some that perhaps either House or Senate races that are surprisingly close?
You know, it's hard to say because there's obviously no polling down at that level that we're privy to. But, you know, the Addison County Senate race, I think, is interesting, where you have two independents running, Paul Ralston and Marie Audette, running pretty strong campaigns. Senator Claire Eyre is not running again, and Senator Chris Bray is seeking reelection as a Democrat. So that could be an interesting one to keep our eyes on. In the Rutland County race, I think Democrats are hopeful that they'll be able to pick up at least one of those seats. And so in the House, it seems likely that that Republicans might dip under that 50 mark and Democrats would have a veto-proof majority. But it seems to me that having that veto-proof majority, unless it's a really big spread, might be more problematic for Democrats than they want to admit. I think there were a number of more moderate Democrats that voted for things like the higher minimum wage and paid family leave, but were feeling a bit squishy about it and voted for it knowing that it would be vetoed and it couldn't be overridden. So I think if House Speaker Mitzi Johnson returns and they have a veto-proof majority, it's going to be a lot harder to keep that coalition together for those types of ideas.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Xenia in Barrie. Hi, Xenia. Welcome to the program.
Hi. For all the statewide candidates and some more local ones even, if Lake Champlain and Lake Carmi and the other ones are allowed to go bad with blue-green algae and stuff, say goodbye to the economy and focusing on, oh, don't raise taxes and fees, is very short-sighted. Something needs to be done there, or our tourist economy, which is a bigger and bigger part of our incomes, that's irresponsible not to address it.
Xenia, thanks for your question and comment very much. You know, April, I find it interesting that State Treasurer Beth Pierce jumped into the debate over water quality, making the very same point I think that Xenia did, that the future economy of the state of Vermont could be at risk here, and tourism in particular.
Right, and that, and the other part of that argument is, you know, yes, there's cost now, but it would avert more costs down the road, and this is something we're going to have to do. And so we need to start working on it, not just because of the situation on the ground, but also because the federal government has mandated these kind of projects. So Beth Pierce leading the charge, Christine Hallquist has said that she supports the way that Beth Pierce has approached this issue. And Phil Scott, you know, on the flip side, has been saying that we can use existing revenue streams, or perhaps, you know, if there's that power line built under Lake Champlain, that would help us out with finding some money. So we're going to have to see if the legislature has the courage in the next session to finally settle on a funding stream. This is something that they've been putting off for a few years now.
Let me put you all on the spot in terms of what's going to happen on Tuesday. And just in the context of, are there going to be any big surprises, or are the incumbents in pretty good shape? So the VPR Vermont PBS poll showed incumbents were in very strong positions. Neil, any surprises coming?
Based on what we know, I would say it's highly unlikely we're going to see any major upsets.
Alicia?
I'm going to be boring and say no major upsets with the caveat that we, you know, post-2016, I think we're all a little more hesitant to make any kind of predictions.
April, what do you think?
Yeah, I really struggle trying to predict the future. We've only had a few polls in Vermont in the major races, and that makes me nervous, that things change up until Election Day. And so I really don't want to predict who's going to win.
I will say, if we're going to see any surprises, I think it'll be in probably House races, with maybe a handful of incumbents being knocked off and replaced by newcomers. I think that's probably where it could happen.
And Alicia, you said after 2016, people are hesitant to even trust the polls. I'm also reminded of 2014, when Scott Milne came within a whisker of defeating Peter Shumlin, an incumbent governor. And I don't think a lot of people saw that coming. So that's a good reason to not be too bold with our predictions. Do you think, Alicia, just we've got a couple of seconds left, is there going to be a big turnout in Vermont, voter turnout? Is this – you would hear about blue waves all across the country, and could that help some Democratic candidates here?
I think it's possible. I think Democrats like Hallquist are certainly hoping it will. I mean, we saw a very high turnout for the August primary, which people weren't necessarily expecting. So even though these aren't viewed as hyper-competitive races, I do think it's possible that we'll see a surprisingly high turnout.
We'll be following all of these races on election night. Many thanks to our guests today, Alicia Fries of 7 Days, April McCollum of the Burlington Free Press, and Neil Goswami of WCAX-TV.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.